Good afternoon, everyone. I got to say, I appreciate very much that sermonette for a couple reasons. Number one, I've been to that town that Mr. Leidick was talking to. And if it's the same one I'm thinking of, it's a little town in Nevada, and it is desolate. So there's probably just me and his family are the only people east of the Mississippi who's ever been there. So, but other than that, certainly do appreciate the topic, the feast, the upcoming feast. I know it's probably on everyone's mind, and that's a good thing. It's something about the fall holy days, and if you're like me, when it comes to the spring holy days, I'm generally trying to wonder, to think if I'm living correctly, you know, if I'm living righteously. And then when the fall holy days come around, I'm generally thinking, am I living in such a way righteously that I'm qualifying to be in a position of authority? So anyway, it's that time of year, and I appreciate that. And we all should really be thinking that way, because otherwise, what are we doing here? God could have called us some other time, but he's got to prepare the teachers, right? There's no doubt about that. Let's turn to Psalm 9 as we start. Psalm 9, still one of the most incredible truths that I've learned being in God's church is that I and the rest of this team are going to be in positions of authority in a coming world government. And if that doesn't shake you in a good way, you may not have a pulse. So, but look at Psalm 9 and verse 8. And he, God in Christ, shall judge the world in righteousness, and he shall minister judgment to the people in uprightness. And we're going to be there. When you think about, we're told that we're going to be sitting on thrones, we're going to have power over the nations. So that, when you read that verse, you could pretty much say, well, that can include me. That can include us. It's very exciting. This is a time of year, it's very exciting, because if you think about it, again, the spring holy days, are we doing, excuse me, are we doing our homework? Are we learning? Are we growing over, and are we overcoming? And then when the fall holy days come, are we continuing to live that way all the time, learning, growing, overcoming, so that then we can operate in those positions of authority? It's really stunning. We are going to assist God Almighty in doing something, again, that's hard to really truly understand, because, you know, we're physical, and a lot of times we're still carnal, and we just don't always do things right. So let's go to another verse here, because if in fact this is what we're shooting for as we're coming up to the fall holy days, turn to Proverbs 29. You know, I'll just say one more thing about Psalm 9 and verse 8, in which we just read. When it says that God, and ultimately us, if we do our part, to judge the world in righteousness, that, again, it depends on how we're doing, how we're growing, but he's going to judge the world in righteousness. And the whole point here is to learn how to live righteously, okay? And I don't want to lose that point. In judgment, minister judgment to the people in uprightness or fairness. Unfortunately, for a lot of governments in the world, they don't rule in such a way that it's fair. Now, they're getting away with it now But you understand that's not always going to be the case. I know we understand that. So anyway, in Proverbs 29, verse 2, again, another amazing verse that's directly attributable to us. 29, verse 2, when the righteous are in authority, the people rejoice. And then, you know, the flip side, but when the wicked bear rule, the people mourn. So, if we're living the right way, if we're qualifying by living righteously, that just means lawfully, we have this opportunity to make a lot of people happy. And I don't know about you, and I'm sure this is the case for all of you, but that would make me happy. I'm sure it would make you happy if you're responsible for making other people happy. It's just one of these things I hope we don't take for granted. And this is the time of year where we really should begin focusing, because this is what we're being trained to do. We're being trained to occupy these positions of authority when the kingdom of God arrives. Now, in saying that, this isn't just future. You know, this isn't all future, because right now, we should be ruling righteously in our own lives. We've all been given something. We've all been given opportunities. We've all been given gifts. And the truth is that we rule, or we make judgments every day of our lives. And if we're not cognizant that we're ruling right now, and I think we all tend to be that, I think we know that, but if we're not cognizant that we're doing this now for later, then we're missing a step. In the parable of the pounds, go to Luke 19. Parable of the pounds, Luke 19. A simple statement here proves that every single decision and every single judgment that we make in our lives matters. It really, really matters. Luke 19, after the individual in this parable gained 10 pounds, verse 17. This is all we should really know going forward. And he said unto him, well done, in effect, good servant, because you have been faithful in a very little. And because you've been faithful in a very little, I'm going to reward you in a great big way. So every decision, every judgment that comes our way, we have to be aware of what's at stake. Are we judging righteously? Is in the back of our mind with every judgment or decision that we make, are we thinking about the people that are going to rejoice because of the success of our decisions? If not, we should be, because that's the future. That's the future. And sometimes, I know, I get it, we sometimes the eternity isn't real, because we're here, right? And it just seems like taking forever for God to do, to pull the trigger, and, you know, God is God, He's going to do what He's going to do. But today, because this is such an important topic, I'm going to talk about the basics of making righteous decisions, making righteous judgments. Because like I said, if we're not focused in on that now, in handling the very little things that we've been given on a day-to-day basis, well, we're missing opportunity. And days keep ticking off the calendar, and we're missing opportunity, and we don't want to miss opportunity. So we're going to learn some basics, and we'll learn that judgments, and every single judgment we make, does matter for our future, and not only for our future. Keep in mind, again, when the righteous are in authority, there's going to be great happiness among people. And I think this is playing out on the world stage, and I can't help but think that God is allowing things to unravel so that we, and everyone, you don't have to be in the church to see that there's such horrific corruption in vile, disgusting judgments that are being made on the world stage. I'm not just talking here in the United States. I mean, everywhere. And it's, to me, I just think God is going to allow us to see how bad it can get when you're not tied into Him and have His Spirit and are working toward living lawfully. People are going to mourn because of the way people are judging. So anyway, we're going to look at that. We're going to look at some basics. But before we do that, we're going to take an aptitude test. You love aptitude tests, don't you? It kind of determines where you are on the spectrum. And this aptitude test is to see how well you're going to judge a story. This is a true story. I'm not going to tell you where. It didn't take place in the United States, but it's a true story, and I'm going to throw out some facts to prepare you to determine how you're going to make this judgment. All right, you ready for a test here? Now, let's do this. I'm going to tell you first the basic facts. I've got five basic biblical facts that I'm going to give you to prepare you for making this judgment. Okay? We should all be working on preparing to be judges and all that entails. But five basic facts. And then I'm going to tell you this story. And there's four, we'll call it characters, involved in the story. And I wish I could have you write down what you do, how you would judge this, but I can't. But it's just going to show you, kind of give you that on that meter. Where am I? Did I judge this right? All right? So the first basic fact or biblical principle I'm going to give you is in 1 Samuel 8. So let's go there. And you're going to want to just jot down a few words because you're going to look at these five things. And when I tell you this story, you're going to have to make a judgment. So 1 Samuel 8. Now, this is the time when the people wanted a physical king to rule over them. That's when Saul was chosen. But look at think of this as a high biblical principle of God. Look what God says. Oh, you want a physical king instead of me to rule over you? Okay, well, this is what's going to happen then. So in verse 11, and he said, this will be the manner of the king that shall reign over you. And the way that's worded, it's, okay, not just this king, I mean any physical king, all right? He will take your sons and appoint them for himself, for his chariots, and to be his horsemen, and so forth. He's going to take your sons. In other words, he's going to take your young people and draft them into an army. Verse 13, and he'll take your daughters to be confectionaries, and to be cooks, and to be bakers. Verse 14, and he's going to take your fields, and your vineyards, and your olive yards, the best of them, and he'll give them to his servants. And he'll take the tenth of your seed and of your vineyards and give to his officers and to his servants. And he'll take your men servants and your maid servants and your goodliest young men, the best of your men, and your asses and put them in his work. And he'll take the tenth of your sheep and you'll be his servants. Take, take, take. Does that sound like human government? Yeah. We call it taxes, right? But oh, they got plenty of arms. capacity to keep taking and taking and taking. God says, if you do that, get ready to lose your things. And then verse 18, which is, how true is this? And you shall cry out in that day because your king, which you shall have chosen you, and the Lord will not hear you in that day. And for 6,000 years, in effect, he hasn't been hearing the world. He hears. But hey, you wanted to do things on your own? And then with the nation of Israel, you want to have a physical king? Okay. This is how it's going to be. Of course, you know how Israel said, no, we want a king. Oh, God's just like, oh, you're going to take and take and take. Anyway, that's the first basic principle. All right, I'm preparing you. So put on your paper, government take. This is going to help you make this wise judgment, hopefully. All right, the next one is in Ezekiel 18. This one's easy. By the time you get there, I may already have read it. Ezekiel 18, and the point is, we're each responsible for our own actions. Again, these are basic principles, right? We all know this. We're all responsible for our own actions. Ezekiel 18 and verse 20. Let me remind you, the soul that sins, it shall die. The son shall not bear the iniquity of the father, neither shall the father bear the iniquity of the son. The righteousness of the righteous shall be upon him, and the wickedness of the wicked shall be upon him. Simple, basic premise, right? We're all responsible individually for what we do. All right, that was number two. Number three, property should stay within the family. Now, back in Israel, Numbers 27, I don't know if I'm not going to read a lot of this, if at all. But inheritances were supposed to stay within the family. It was to be passed on from generation to generation. Yeah, this is just too long. In Numbers 27, there is a situation where a father dies. There was only daughters. And basically, what happens here is Moses goes to God and says, how do I handle this? He says, well, you know, it's got to go down through the families. Anyway, you could take the time to read that. So that's the third basic principle of this story I'm going to tell you that you're going to have to judge is property should stay in a family. That was always how it was. That's always, I'm sure, how it's going to be once God takes over again. And number four, property will be returned to the original owner every 50 years. That's the Jubilee. And that's in Leviticus 25. If we were so inclined to read that, let me see how much there is there. Yeah, let's just, Leviticus 25, let's go there. I'll just read a couple verses here. Leviticus 25 and verse 25. Well, we'll start in verse 23. The land shall not be sold forever. The land is mine, and your strangers and sojourners with me, and in all the land of your possession you shall grant the redemption for the land. And if your brother be waxen poor, if he gets in a dire straits and has to sell away some of his possession, and if any of his kin come to redeem it, then he shall redeem it. All right, if there's family that can help out. But it goes on, and then in verse 28 says, but if he be not able to restore it to him, the land, then that which is sold shall remain in the land of him that bought it until the year of the Jubilee. And in the Jubilee it shall go out, and it shall return unto his possession. All right, so the fourth point is property will be returned to the original owner every 50 years if they had sold it because they were in dire straits. All right, that's the law. It doesn't happen now like that, but it will, and it did. And then finally, turn to Romans 9. Let's just say this. Just very quickly, Romans 9 and verse 18. The best way to summarize this, 9 verse 18, God is God. Okay, but let me read the verse. Therefore has he mercy on whom he'll have mercy and whom he will harden. In other words, hey, God's going to handle a situation however he's going to handle it. Okay? So there's our 5 points. Let me just re-say them real quickly here. Governments take. We're each responsible for our own actions. Property should stay in a family. Property will ultimately be returned to the original owner at the Jubilee, and then finally God is God. All right, now let me tell you a true story. And it did not happen here in the United States. There was a landowner. See, now you understand why I picked the verses I did. There was a landowner. Hold on. And he had a great piece of property. Do you ever go driving or go somewhere and you pass somewhere and it's like, wow, that's the perfect place. I wish I lived there. Well, this landowner had that kind of a place. Matter of fact, in his country, it was actually the area that he lived in and where his property was. It's called the breadbasket of that company. I mean, just fertile. So here he is, you know, just enjoying life. I would imagine, I don't have a picture of it by any means, but what I picture of being so fertile, probably rolling hills. You ever seen rolling hills with like vineyards and you got horses roaming? I mean, it was like the perfect place. You know, stream, what's the word? Trickling. It's a perfect place. Everyone wanted it. So what happens is this high-ranking political figure comes by and says, oh, I want this. I can use this. This is a true story. So he goes to the owner and says, I want to buy this property. And the owner, who's had this property for generations, I mean, he was sentimentally attached to it. So he says, no. He says this to a high-ranking political figure. Now, I don't know if these individuals knew what we just went through. Remember we talked, hey, God says, if you want a physical king, they're going to take and take and take and take. Should that man, if he did know that, should he have thought, oh man, that's just how it has to be. I will go ahead and give it to him or sell it to him or whatever. Or did he know the principle that, no, you're not, the land stays within families. Okay. Well, what ends up happening is this political figure was devastated because the owner said no. Now you would think with as corrupt as the world is, that political figure may have went and began to start the process to just take it from him. Because that happens, right? I think that's called what, eminent domain, or the government can do that. So what happens is this political figure, high ranking, goes back home, tells his sleazy wife what happened, and she began the process of putting this man in the position to where it was going to be stolen. True story. But it got worse. The situation turned into, again, sleazy, evil woman made it circumstances to where that owner was killed because of what she did. Not so good, is it? So once that happens, now there's still one more major thing that happens here. Now, in the United States, the highest court in the land is what? The Supreme Court. Well, here, the Supreme Court of this nation knows about what happened. And what happens, again, it's kind of mind-boggling, but the chief, I'm trying to hide what this story is, but the chief, the top individual in this Supreme Court, forgives this individual, not the wife, but the individual, the husband, of what happens. Okay? You following me so far? And not only did he forgive the person who did that, but he said that he will exact punishment on the guy's son. All right, so now it's time to test your aptitude in judging this situation. Was the landowner right or wrong? He said no, based on our 5 points. Was the political officer, high-ranking political officer, right or wrong? Was the sleazy, I'm giving things away, the sleazy evil wife, was she right or wrong? And was the top character in the Supreme Court, was he or she right or wrong? I wish I could hear your responses. Go to 1 Kings 21. I can't withhold this anymore. This is a true story. Remember the name Naboth? This is exactly what happened. Again, the question is, how would you judge this? Well, let me cut out some of the mystery. That character, the protagonist, or whatever you want to call this individual on the Supreme Court, that was God. And that's why I said, God is God, so put him off to the side. You're not going to judge him, okay? Does that make sense? The story here, chapter 21, is a familiar story. Let me just jump around because you'll see how I presented this. Verse 1, chapter 21, 1 Kings. Came to pass after these things that Naboth the Jezreelite had a vineyard. He lived in Jezreel. That's called the breadbasket of Israel. It's in northern Israel. It's an amazing, fertile area. At least it was back then. I don't know today if that is. Verse 2, Ahab, that's our high political officer. He was the king of Israel at that time. He spoke to Naboth, give me your vineyard. At least, then, he says, I'll give you for a better vineyard. Or if it seemed good to you, I'll give you the worth of it in money. So he's not stealing it outrightly. All right. Verse 3, Naboth said to Ahab, the Lord forbid me that I should give the inheritance of my fathers unto you. Ah, okay. So he realized, well, he either was very sentimental about it and it was this beautiful property, or he knew what God said. No, that needs to stay in the family. Verse 4, Ahab came into his house heavy and displeased. Oh, he was depressed. He laid down upon his bed and turned away his face, and he would eat no bread. Oh, too bad, huh? But verse 5, the sleazy evil woman, Jezebel, came to him. No, I have the right to call her. Well, you know about Jezebel. Wife came to him and said unto him, why is your spirit so sad and you eat no bread? So he tells her, Well, let's just keep reading. And he said unto her, because I spoke unto Naboth the Jezreelite, and he said, give me your vineyard for money, or else if you please, I'll give you another vineyard for it. He answered, I will not give you my vineyard, he said. And Jezebel, his wife, said unto him, do you now govern for a kingdom of Israel? In other words, aren't you the king? What are you doing? Arise, eat bread, let your heart be merry, and I'll give you the vineyard of Naboth in the Jezreelite. So she wrote letters in Ahab's name, sealed them with his seal, sent the letters unto the elders of the nobles that were in his city. Verse 10, sent two men of Belial. Oh, that's not good. The word means worthlessness. To bear witness against them, saying, you did blaspheme God and the king. All right, you see what's going on here? Jezebel is setting Naboth up to lose the vineyard that the crybaby wanted. So it keeps going. Verse 13, there came two men, children of Belial, and they witnessed against him, and Naboth did blaspheme God and the king, and they carried him forth out of the city, stoned him with stones, that he died. Unjust. So how would you judge this? I told you already, if you read it through, you know, God, all right, well, let's look at this. Here we go. Just so we can get this fully in our mind. Let's see, verse 21, I'll bring evil upon you and take away your posterity and cut off from Ahab that pisses against the wall. Him that's shut up in the left of Israel. And then verse 30 or 23, what happens to Jezebel? And Jezebel also spoke to the Lord, saying, the dog shall eat Jezebel by the wall of Jezreel. All right, so God is making a judgment, this supreme court in heaven. Verse 25, but there was none unlike to Ahab, which did sell himself to work wickedness in the sight of the Lord, who Jezebel his wife stirred up. And he did very abominably in following idols according to all the things and so on and so forth. So he deserved what God said was going to happen to him. But look what happened. Verse 27, and it comes to pass when Ahab heard those words that he rent his clothes, put sackcloth upon his flesh, fasted and lay in sackcloth and went softly. So he, wow, he's feeling really bad. He did wrong. Verse 29, see you how Ahab humbles himself before me? Because he humbles himself before me, I will not bring the evil in his days. He's going to cut him a break, but look at this. But in his son's days will I bring evil unto his house. Isn't everyone responsible for what they do? We looked at those various things. What? Judgment can be hard, can it? Can't it? God is God, so we're not going to talk about that. We'll put him off to the side. But what about the others? Was that? How would you judge that if you were God? Would you say, well, Ahab, you repented. I'm going to cut your break. I'm going to cause problems for your son. Well, sometimes it's hard to understand, right, how God handles things, because his thoughts are not our thoughts. Anyway, the point being here is these are the type of things we should be beginning to think about, because we're going to be in those positions where we're going to make judgments. And right now, every day in our lives, we can take the little judgments and decisions we have to make and put them in a context that, wow, God is watching me. I'm learning. This is all about, yeah, I want things to work out for me, but wow, this is about making people happy. And what a better time to begin thinking about these things is we're coming to the feast. Complete focus on the kingdom of God. We're going to be ruling with God and Jesus Christ. We need to be practicing how to properly make good, righteous judgments. Because if we're not, do we really think we're going to be a part of this? Now, before I get into some very basic basics of ruling and judging and deciding, I want you to consider this. The difference between the way God judges and rules and the way the devil judges and rules. Surely there's a difference, right? Turn to Isaiah 14. Oh, there's a difference. As I'm sure you understand that. There is a difference. Isaiah 14, let's see, in verse 6, breaking into the thought here, he who smote the people in wrath with a continual stroke, he that ruled the nations in anger, is persecuted and none hinders. It's kind of hard to understand what's being said there. If you put it in another translation, you, God talking to the devil, struck the people with endless blows of rage and held the nations in your angry grip with unrelenting tyranny. Okay, that's how the devil rules. And you know what? Guess what? You can see some of that in our human rulers, can't you? In how they judge. You look at some of these Gentile nations, and we've seen it. Places we've been to war, without mentioning any of these despots, think of some of the ways that people have ruled, how they have judged others. Horrifying. Millions of people suffer and die at the hands of people who do not judge righteously. That's where we come in. We're going to change the world. And that's what we should be focusing on. Not, oh, I got this problem, I got that problem, blah, 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 I got this pain. What? All right, that's going to happen because they're physical, but what about the people who need to rejoice? What about them? When the righteous are in authority, people rejoice. That should be our focus constantly. But boy, at this time of the year when we're actually going to be picturing sitting in positions of authority and ruling. How do we rule now? How do we rule in our lives? That's the question we should be asking ourselves. Now, all right, so let's take a look at the other side of the coin. Let's look and see how God rules or judges. Turn to Psalm 98. There's the obvious. It's like, you know, night and day. But let's just read Psalm 98 and verse 9. And understand this better apply to us. And if it doesn't apply to us completely and wholly, which it doesn't right now, but we need to be making sure we're taking steps to get there. Psalm 98 and verse 9, before the Lord, for he comes to judge the earth, with righteousness shall he judge the world, and the people with equity, with fairness. There's your two differences. The devil rules the nations in anger, and you could probably think of all other different types of adjectives. And God rules and definitely will rule the people with equity, with fairness. Now, you might say, well, it's a little difficult sometimes to make decisions in a righteous manner because, you know, maybe I want to protect myself from pain that could come from doing what I should, but I'm a little hesitant and I may compromise a little bit. We all understand we're living in a world that's governed by someone that says that rules in anger. So we've got to accept that and just carry on. What does it matter if our decisions, if we're doing things righteously and humbly and all the other things, you know, that you can describe it? What does it matter if someone gets upset? Go boo-hoo, just like Ahab. Oh, I didn't get the vineyard. Oh, I'm not going to eat. Boo-hoo. Who cares? Who cares? God's looking for some people who are going to stand up and judge righteously in their lives. Should be us. It needs to be us. If you care not only about yourself, about the welfare of other people, then this shouldn't be hard. It really shouldn't. Wow, the thought of making people happy. We've all seen the unhappiness in this world. We've all seen the wrong decisions made for the benefit of people in rulership positions that, quite honestly, don't belong there. But God put them there. They didn't want, well, for terms of the nation of Israel, and even with Adam and Eve, no, just hands off, do it yourself, that's what you want. Well, this is the fruit, our world, this is the fruit that comes by not judging righteously, by not having a relationship with God, without knowing His ways. This is the consequences. We're different. We know that, so now we can do things in our lives and make judgments and decisions that are righteous, that are lawful, that are more, we're concerned about the welfare of others. This may be a good time to let me fit it in because it's low-hanging fruit. The Feast of Tabernacles is coming, right? We know that. And we heard a little bit in the sermonette about second tithes. How do we judge? How do we rule our finances? Do we, it's tight this month, I'm just going to take a little out, I'll put it right back. How many times have you heard that? How many times have I seen that? It's not ours to touch. It's for God's feast days. Anyway, that's one example about, ruling yourself and make, that's a bad judgment if you get to that point. Well, you don't understand, I don't have a lot. Well, that's a different problem. You give, you get back. And then you should save. Both are godly principles. You give, and it will be given, and then you save. If you don't save, if you don't have things you're saving for a rainy day, which is always going to come, you're not keeping a simple basic principle of God. Give me one second here. Let me read a verse here that describes that. We're not going to go there, but Proverbs 10, verses 4 to 5 says, "He becomes poor that deals or is occupied doing with a slack hand or a deceitful or lazy hand. He becomes poor that deals with a slack hand, but the hand of the diligent, one who is determined and works hard, becomes rich." How is that possible? "He that gathers in summer," in other words, he that plans, puts things aside when things are good and plentiful, "is a wise son, but he that sleeps in harvest is a son that causes shame." Again, this is low-hanging fruit, and it's relevant because of the time we're in. You don't touch God's money, you save it. And this goes beyond the feast in your second tithe. If you want to be in a position where you can help people and have them rejoice, now you give, which is a principle of God, and you save, which is a principle of God. Simple stuff. "Well, I don't make much money." It doesn't matter. If you're faithful in the little things, God's got this covered. He's got every excuse cut off. Okay, it's important. It has everything to do with how we judge and decide, how we rule our lives. All right. Now let's go into the basics. I'm going to give you some straight out basics of how you can make sure that you're going to rule and judge righteously so you can just step right into that position of authority when it comes time. Deuteronomy 16. Deuteronomy 16 and verse 19. Deuteronomy 16 and verse 19. You shall not wrest judgment. Oh, we better define that. That word just basically means pervert, to distort what was first intended. God's telling us, do not pervert judgment. You shall not respect persons, neither take a gift, for a gift blinds the eyes of the wise and perverts the words of righteousness. You're going to find out that God has a lot to say about you do not show favorites. And I'm telling you, That isn't easy to follow that. It really isn't. I can tell you a million different stories of situations that I've witnessed that people perverted judgment. Let me give you an example. A man who was in leadership position. This is a true story. A man in a leadership position had several people under him, and one day a woman who worked for him did something that was really not very nice. So as the leader, what do you think he did? Well, what he should have done was corrected, and based on how severe the infraction was, should have probably fired her and got rid of her and maybe even called the police. But you know what he did? You know how he perverted justice? Because this woman was attractive. Well, you know, he gave her a talking to, but no, there's no way he was going to fire her. There was no way he was going to call the police on her. Do you see what that resting judgment, perverting judgment. That's why God says right in that context, you shall not, respect persons. You should not judge them based on their rank or their position or their whatever. God's saying, no! You deal with whatever you need to deal with, and we have to take this into our personal lives. You deal with it according to righteousness. Don't let anything color your eyes or your judgment. And I'm telling you, women make a living out of playing their bosses. Right? I'm sure you've seen it before. Friends, family, or whatever. Women, guess what? Women aren't stupid. And I'm just saying this in a broad sense. They know. They know they can. They know. Not stupid. Turn to a few pages to Deuteronomy 24. Man, that drives God nuts. Now, I'll show you here how nuts, but Deuteronomy 24 basically says the same thing. Verse 17. You shall not pervert. Here it's translated pervert, but it's the same word we just looked at. Rest. All right. You shall not pervert the judgment of the stranger, nor the fatherless, nor take a widow's raiment to pledge. Do not pervert justice. And again, we're talking big things here, but I'm telling you, go smaller. How do you ask yourselves, Do we pervert justice in our own lives? Do we cut corners because, wow, this person is a favorite of mine, or, oh, I just pity this person? No! You stay right down the center, and I'll even show you that. Let's go to Leviticus 19. God does not see things like we see things. He's not impressed when someone's rich, and let me read this first before I finish the statement. I'm going to tell you, as someone who works with human beings and has to counsel people, this principle we're going to read right now is so hard for physical human beings. It is so hard in our own lives in dealing with the smallest issues. This is so hard. Look what this says. Verse 15, Leviticus 19 and verse 15. You shall do no unrighteousness in judgment. You shall not respect the person of the poor, nor honor the person of the mighty. But in righteousness shall you judge your neighbor. That's hard. Well, wait a second. The poor. People who may have gone through so much oppression or whatever. We can't kind of side with them when we're trying to figure out a judgment or a decision. That's a no. Don't do it. That's unbelievable. Don't respect the person of the poor, nor honor the person of the mighty. He wants us right down the middle, and when we deal with things according to his law isn't fuzzy. His law is pretty straightforward. Don't respect people. Again, think how this would work. Wow, look at this folk. Already down Georgia. No. Look at this person. Look at the money they have. Look at the car they drive. Oh, I'm going to buddy up to them. No. Oh, okay. Well, look at this poor thing. Just eating dirt has no way to support them. Surely I'm going to. No. What does my law say? There it is. Don't do any unrighteousness in judgment. It does not matter. It does not matter the person's circumstances to where you can favor one or the other. What does God's law say? Turn to Deuteronomy 1. I'm telling you, this is hard. And the first time I learned this principle, I was better off for it, but I'm telling you, it's still very difficult. Verse 13. We'll just start in verse 13. Deuteronomy 1, verse 13. Talking about leaders. Leaders do what? Leaders make judgments and decisions. Take you wise men in understanding and known among your tribes, and I'll make them rulers over you. And you answered me and said, the thing which you have spoken is good for us to do. So I took the chief of your tribes, wise men and known, and made them heads over you, captains over thousands, and captains over hundreds, and captains over fifties, captains over tens, and officers among your tribes. Verse 16. And I charged your judges at that time, saying, hear the causes between your brethren, and judge righteously between every man and his brother and the stranger that is with him. And you shall not respect persons as in judgment. And you shall hear the small as well as the great. And you shall not be afraid of the face of man, for the judgment is God's. And the cause that is too hard for you, bring it unto me and I'll hear it. You shall not be afraid of the face of man. Think about this. Now in the ministry, I can say this, but I'm telling you, it applies to every single person in here. We are not to be afraid of the face of man. When it comes to making decisions and judgments in our life, who cares what anyone else thinks? Because the more we care about what anyone else thinks and it affects our judgment and our decisions, trying to do things righteously, well, guess what door you're not going to come in when the kingdom of God gets here? God can't use people like that. Oh, I'm afraid I don't want to offend this person because, wow, he's rich and someday I might need a favor. Or this person who's poor, oh, you know, even though they committed this egregious sin, I can't punish them. I can't discipline them. Or even if you're in a, we've all been here, family members who go out of their mind because we dare to live differently. You don't be afraid of anybody. You fear no one, because why would you if our King is God Almighty? What are they going to do? Are they going to be mad at us? Oh, they won't talk to me. Oh, I'm going to lose them. Don't be a little thinker when it comes to judging righteously. When it comes to making the right decision and it lines up with God's way of life, who do you got to apologize to? And why would you? Jesus Christ said, if you're ashamed of me and what I stand for, then guess what? My Father's going to be ashamed of you. We've got to get, you talk about spine up. We need some spines. And not worry about what every person thinks about our judgments and our decisions because they're based on righteousness. I'm telling you, that is one of the hardest things to do when you're dealing with human beings, but when you're only dealing with your own circumstances. Can you take it? Can you take family members saying, I'm leaving? Can you take it? A spouse? Ooh. Can you take it if a spouse says, I'm leaving, I don't believe this anymore? Oh. No. God's trying to build an army right now. An army of decision makers. We've got to make sure we understand our priorities. Our priorities are not our physical family. Our priorities are not our comfort. Our priorities are these people who right now are in sorrow and mourning because they got people over them who just don't care. That's where we're different. And is it difficult to line up here and do what God is telling us to do? You better believe it. So what? One of the disadvantages we have in a country, an Israelite country that has much, is that we can become soft. And you got to fight that. God wants warriors standing up for the truth. In every single one of our decisions and judgments about how we live our life and how we treat people and how we handle our finances and how we do everything is going to determine. Proverbs 29:2. Let me show you something. I've used this before. You don't have to turn it. I want you to listen. Job 7 and verse 17. Very familiar, but listen to this in the context that we're talking about right now. What is man that you should magnify him? And that you should set your heart upon him. And that you should visit him every morning and try him every moment. Hey, our decision making, our judgments are on trial right now. Good. Are we always making the right decision? Are we always lined up in righteous judgment? Of course not. We're not there yet. But we should be striving for it. And we shouldn't care what other people think. When we're living a certain way, that God, when He's testing us every moment, and it's lining up and saying, okay, that person I can trust in a position of authority over others, because they can rule and govern themselves right now. The little things. It's the little things. Again, we could just wing off all kinds of doctrines of God. Again, did you realize that saving is a doctrine? It is. Just like giving, it's a doctrine. There's so many things in God's Word that show us and coach us how to judge righteously. Okay, let's look at a couple other, again, we're talking basic stuff. Let's talk, go James 4. James 4. Again, you talk about this. This stuff isn't easy. All right? This is not easy. Look at verse 17. James 4 and verse 17. To him that knows to do good and doesn't do it, it's sin. Well, that's saying, it's not like I'm, all right, I'm going out and sin. I'm going to go out and get drunk. Or I'm going to go out and do this or steal it. This is talking about if you don't do something. You know how hard this is? To him that knows to do good and doesn't do it, it's sin. You failed at making the right judgment. You failed at judging righteously by not doing something. Someone's in trouble. Or whatever the case may be. There's a million different things here. Again, let's talk about something at the feast. So basic. So simple. You see someone who's off on their own. And they don't have anyone coming because maybe they're not dressed that great. And maybe they have some other problems and they're sick or they're in a wheelchair and just there's just not a lot of people paying them any attention because, man, I want to do this and I want to do that. And wow, people from my congregation, we're tight. And in your mind, you glance at that person who's all alone. I want to go over here. No one, who's going to know? Who's going to know? They won't. Probably no one in that room will know except you and God. You know, the one who's testing us every moment. Because now only God can read our intentions. But if we literally looked at this person, it's like, oh man, I'd rather talk with this person. You know, I see them every week. God's saying, you've broken my law. So I ask you, was that a good decision? Was that a righteous judgment? Of course not. And there's 8 million different examples I can give here. But the fact is, you know, we just looked at two verses with this stuff's hard. And we got to discipline ourselves to make sure that we're living the right way and that we could, again, always comes back to Proverbs 29 verse 2. I want to make people happy. When I wasn't converted, I made a lot of people sad. I did. And I'm sure you did too. But now, it's interesting, if we make people say it now, it's probably because we're standing up for God's truth. Yeah. All right, let's look at another basic premise here, basic on how to make righteous decisions. Turn to Amos 5. I mean, this is the most basic of basic. Amos 5. Amos 5, verse 15. Hate the evil, love the good. Woo! And establish judgment in the gate. Well, I guess this is probably a good one to, in the spring holy days, to determine, am I living righteously? Do we hate evil? And do we love good? Oh, well, of course. Okay, good. Well, I hope that's the case. Do we hate evil and love good when it comes to our decisions and judgments? Greatest plague of a Christian can be compromising what it is that we know. So we just need to be careful. Leviticus 24. Try to squeeze in a few more here. Leviticus 24. Verse 22. You shall have one manner of law, as well for the stranger, for one of your own country, from the Lord your God. One manner of law. One manner of law is not up for debate. One manner of law that all that we do, all our judgments and all our decisions, hang on that one manner of law. That one way of life. And if it doesn't, if we compromise, if we kind of go off, because we're afraid what other people are going to think or what they're going to do or blah, 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 then we're not being faithful in the very little things, the very few things. I think few is said in the parable of the talents. Parable of pounds is very little that we're overseeing. One manner of loss. Okay? We've got to know what our priorities are. Go ahead and turn to Proverbs 11. This is actually interesting because I'm going to expand it. Proverbs 11, again, a basic principle. You may never have looked at it like this. Proverbs 11, verse 1. A false balance is an abomination to the Lord, but a just weight is His delight. A false balance. Well, that doesn't seem quite related, does it? A false balance is an abomination. Well, something false, again, think of it, something that deceives or, you know, lies or misrepresents. Apply this to our own lives in the judgments and the decisions that we make. Is it false? Is it, even if it's compromised? There's something about injustice that God hates. He wants us to be authentic, but He wants us to be authentic within His perfect way. We're in Proverbs. Turn a few pages. Proverbs 17. God hates injustice. makes them sick. Makes us sick too, doesn't it? When you see someone cheating, trying to cut the corners of the way it should be, doesn't that make you angry? How do you think that makes God, you know, God feel? Look at the governments of the world and how they almost, in their subjects' face, it's gotten so bad now that they're openly committing crimes and they don't care. How does it make you feel? I almost, you know, I get enraged. When is this going to come to an end? God hates injustice. Verse 15, Proverbs 17 and verse 15. He that justifies the wicked and he that condemns the just, even they both are an abomination to God, who justifies the wicked and condemns the just. Man, God hates a false balance, a false weight. It's horrible. Isaiah 5 and verse 20 says, woe to them who call evil good and good evil. A false balance is an abomination. Well, yeah, I would think so. And we got to make sure that we're not taking that principle and blowing it up in our lives. Well, it's just a white lie. Have you heard that before? It's just a white lie. It's not a big deal, isn't it? Being tested every moment. Maybe white lies do matter. No. It's just... Oh, dear. Leviticus 25. Oh, man. Leviticus 25 and verse 17. When it comes to relationships amongst each other, and even in your families and at work, who aren't converted, who aren't in the church. Verse 17, you shall not therefore oppress one another. You shall not oppress one another. And sometimes when we make decisions and we make judgments, we can oppress one another. We just got to be so very careful about that. There's too many horror stories of people being oppressed, even in the Church of God, starting back in the first era. You know, brethren cheating one another, or brethren holding grudges against one another, or brethren, it wouldn't be in the Bible if it wasn't happening, going to court against one another. Brethren just not treating each other like they should be treated. Not judging righteously and almost operating out of quick reaction when someone says something. Maybe they probably didn't mean it, and next thing you know, oh, I'm not talking to that person. What? Is that a good decision? Don't oppress one another. Fix your relationships, right? It's all laid out on how to do it. Boy, oh boy. Turn Proverbs 21. We're going to just wrap up here. Proverbs 21. I don't think there's anything more important than learning how to judge righteously. It's there for the taking. We've got to learn how to do it. We've got to incorporate that in every aspect of our lives. Because we're on trial. We're on trial right now. God is watching every moment. He's judging us every moment. Proverbs 21 and verse 15 says simply, it's a joy to the just to do judgment, to do it right, to consider the people who we are in effect training for. It's a joy to us. It will be a joy to make other people happy. Psalm 106 and verse 3. Blessed, happy are they that keep judgment, who keep it. That word is to hedge about as with thorns, to guard it. Those who keep judgment, righteous judgment, and he that does righteousness at all times. Our judgments and decisions have to be that umbrella of righteousness. Has to always be with us when we're making these type of decisions. Whether it's, you know, again, think of every aspect of your life. Relationships and finance and work. Everything has to line up perfectly as God has laid it all out for us. We looked at some of the most basic things here. We've got to make sure that we are making righteous judgments. Is it difficult in this world? Yes, it certainly can be. Finally, in Deuteronomy 32. Deuteronomy 32. Verse 4. He is the rock. His work is perfect, for all his ways are judgment. And we know that's talking about righteous judgment. He's a God of truth and without iniquity, just and right is he, and we have to be as well.